Hello and welcome to the August 24th edition of the Dog and Pony Show. I'm your host, Richard Gintout. My special guest today is Eric Malin of Dead Girls Ruin Everything. Also a formidable movie critic in his own. Got a column called Scene Stealers on Lawrence.com. So we'll be talking about the weekend ahead, which features a Dead Girls Ruin Everything show. And so we'll catch up on the band a little bit and listen to a new track. And also talk about opening movies this weekend. Broken Flowers opens in 2 weeks, but Eric's already seen it. The 40-Year-Old Virgin is now in theaters, and so is Red Eye. So why don't we start out, Eric, by introducing yourself and telling me a little bit about where you're at with Dead Girls Ruin Everything these days. Obviously, Eric is former drummer for Ultimate Fake Book. And what's that?
Obviously.
Yeah, well, without a... Anyways, and so you've been doing it for a couple years, well, a year, 2 years now with Dead Girls?
Yeah, we've actually been working on a record for almost a year, which is light years for any band I've been in before, honestly.
Okay, so is it done and how is it? Is it good? What do you think?
It's really good. We just got final mixes yesterday, and I think it's really great. It's 12 songs. They're kind of a mishmash. We did some of them with Trent Bell. In Oklahoma City. We did some with Stephen Edgerton, who plays for the Descendants and All in Oklahoma City, and then we did some with Chris Cosgrove here at Black Lodge.
Okay, cool. And so when do you anticipate it actually coming out?
That's a good question. It's going to be out in the fall. Okay. We don't know exactly when in the fall, but...
Okay, so what have you been doing lately as far as your live shows go?
Pretty much playing the record in its entirety. We saw Dinosaur Jr. in Minneapolis about a month ago on their big reunion tour, and were inspired to cover one of their songs from You're Living All Over Me in 1988. Cool. And so we do Sludge Feast a lot, which is really fun because it's got a lot of crazy wad-out guitars and, you know, gives us a chance to... do the Allman Brothers thing, indie rock style, for a couple minutes.
Cool. How is Dead Girls a different experience for you from Ultimate Fake Book?
Well, I mean, we're both doing pop music. I think Ultimate Fake Book got pigeonholed in the emo genre somehow, even though we were trying to do pop, or pop punk is what they call this. I think the Dead Girls have a lot more of a 70s rock influence than Ultimate Fake Book did. We still have, the pop influences, but we've got two singer-songwriters, you know, who have pretty different styles. We still like to get loud and riffy, but as you can tell from this new song, you know, we're apt to try anything. So.
Cool. Why don't we shut up and listen to the rest of the song here? Turn it up a little bit. So the show is Saturday at the Jackpot Saloon.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes, at the Jackpot.
And you're playing with a band called?
The Spitting Cobras.
And you know nothing about them.
I've heard they're great.
You've heard they're great,
that's
seriously.
That's all I know.
Cool. And why don't we do a little movie chatting here? We're joined by Journal World movie critic John Nickum.
Hello, hello.
How are you, fella?
Good. It's cold in here, though, isn't it?
It's always cold in here.
Yeah.
It's just my... stone cold personality.
Uh-huh. As David Letterman would say, it keeps the comedy fresh.
Uh-huh. Right.
And God knows his comedy's still fresh after all these years.
Wow.
So now in theaters, 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yes.
And I want to get Eric's take on it first. Go ahead.
I thought it was one of the best movies I've seen this year, honestly. It's that rare movie that combines a really nice character, a believable character, with a really raunchy style of comedy that Wedding Crashers almost succeeded at. It was. I liked Wedding Crashers. I think 40-year-old version. 40-year-old Virgin is the version of Wedding Crashers that you don't have to be ashamed about liking.
I turned 40 last month, and so I could relate to this movie a lot.
But you have kids.
Right. Not necessarily in that way, but in other ways.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. This, I think the a lot of people have been comparing the two, Wedding Crashers and Virgin. They're both kind of raunchy. They're both out there. But for whatever reason, I hate to use this Hollywood-ish expression, but I found that there was a heart to 40-year-old Virgin that Wedding Crashers just didn't have. I laughed about equally both of them, but at the end, I liked Virgin better.
Yeah. I really think Wedding Crashers falls into the same trap that all the comedies do these days that are trying to appeal to wide audiences. They have stereotypical characters like the bad boyfriend who's just totally not believable, and they think that we need that.
Right.
And we don't need that in a movie. And I think 40-year-old Virgin really proves that, you know, you've got you don't have to insult your audience's intelligence because they will relate to this stuff if it's true.
And there was no villain. Did you notice that the entire movie? There's no villain.
Yeah,
there is no
really
bad boyfriend.
I didn't think about that.
You know, they could easily throw in an ex-husband character for Catherine Kinnear.
Yeah, they didn't have to.
The funny thing about that movie is, while I was watching it, I saw it at an advanced screening weeks ago. That scene where he gets his chest hair waxed, I found was far more uncomfortable than most torture scenes I've seen in a movie. And I was like, what is it about this? I mean, there were people who were kind of sweating and getting kind of woozy. And come to read that it was 100% real.
Yeah.
It wasn't a special effect. And when they zoom in on his chest and you can see the blood pooling up, that was real. And that's why the reaction of the people in the room is so funny.
Yeah.
Because they're laughing at how offensive it is, but they're also horrified by it. And it's a really uncomfortable, weird moment.
Yeah, plus they get laughs out of drunk driving, which is not something that you see in the movies very often these days.
Cool. Also opening in a weekend is Broken Flowers.
Yes.
And Eric has seen it. John?
Right. I have not seen it.
Okay. And we're a little bit ahead of schedule here, but I just know that people have high expectations for this movie, being that it's a Jim Jarmusch film, and it has Bill Murray in it, whose last movie, in my opinion, was The Pits.
The Life Aquatic?
Is that yeah, let's just, you know, go out on a limb here and...
Well,
is it,
I don't want
what it's cracked
you
up
know,
to be.
Usually, when I'm talking about or writing about movies, there's very few times where two of my favorite movies in a year I talk about in a row. But Broken Flowers is the best movie I've seen this year. So,
how's it compare to Lost in Translation?
I think it's, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have the cinematography. It doesn't have a lot of the dreamlike kind of feel that Lost in Translation has. But Jarmusch has really got, you know, the subtle, quiet, you know, fade in, fade out. I'm just gonna observe life and show you how it is, and then you make up your own mind about it thing. He's got that down. And I think this movie, Bill Murray's just perfectly suited to Jarmusch. I really thought it was amazing, and I haven't liked a lot of his stuff recently, of Jarmusch's movies. And so I just thought, you know, I don't know. When it was over, I wanted to see it again immediately. So I'm really excited when it comes to Lawrence.
I just lost a lot of faith in Bill Murray after Life Aquatic because I thought it was, first of all, probably not his fault. But
Wes Anderson's fault.
Yeah, he did submit himself to, you know, such water torture. So, I mean, for anybody who might have lost any faith in Bill Murray as a result of that movie, is this a different character? You know, do you think he did a good job in Life Aquatic, or
Life Aquatic for me just seemed like a series of events that didn't add up to much, and I think he did the best with what he had. I don't know whether or not Murray knew any better than Anderson did exactly the story that they were telling. You know what I mean? I've only seen it once, and I'm a big Wes Anderson fan. I find it really hard to talk about this movie, honestly, about Life Aquatic.
I find Anderson to be a train wreck. I think he has gotten consistently worse with each movie. I thought Bottle Rocket was his best, and it just goes like a ladder downhill.
Well, he certainly went from kind of the thinning up of his weirdness and turning into a more of a mainstream product with Royal Tenenbaums, and so I guess I was really surprised to find him go the total opposite way with The Life Aquatic. I thought with the budget and with the cinematography and the colors that he was really going to bring this fantasy world to life, and he just didn't have the story to match it, I think.
Let me throw one other thing out there. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever seen a movie called Where the Buffalo Roam?
Sure. Yes.
And it's starring Bill Murray.
It's a Hunter S. Thompson.
I watched 20 minutes of that movie with my girlfriend the other day. That is all we could take.
Yeah.
It's not the best.
No, it also got... I remember when it came out, it just got panned. It was just like a disaster when it came out.
But it's interesting because Hunter S. Thompson's not really a guy. Like, you read his stuff, and you love his writing, and you're just like, wow, the prose is great, the attitude's great, you know? But then there's something about putting it on the screen that just doesn't...
It doesn't work.
Right, and especially when you're trying to imitate him, which Johnny Depp did. That I love Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which Johnny Depp starred as Hunter S. Thompson in the same movie, or the same role as Where the Buffalo Roam. But I think Bill Murray was not doing an impression, whereas I think Johnny Depp was doing an impression. Right. And neither of the movies are great, but they both have like interesting things about them. But if you want the real Hunter S., I think you have to read.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you, John, for stopping by, and Eric, for your commentary as well. We're going to move on to the week ahead and tackle this evening through Saturday, and hopefully Eric and I have something to say about what's worth checking out. Tonight is Wednesday, so over at the Bottleneck, we have Steel Train with Limbeck and Days Away. That's a $7 show. Steel Train is at Wakarusa. They are this very gap-friendly, like, do-everything kind of band, and they're very good, but I cannot say that there's particular reason to check them out.
I toured with Limbeck, though.
Okay.
We have an Ultimate Fake Book, and those guys are great.
Okay.
They're really good. They've kind of refined their sound into sort of this Southern California country vibe, and they used to be total emo.
Yeah, and so they're on Doghouse Records, right, which is a completely emo label. So what's your recommendation on Limbeck? Is that a thing to go see?
Yeah, I really think that their songwriting's matured and that they're starting to find like more of a voice. You know, they started really, really young, and I think they get better with every record, so I'd definitely go check it out.
Cool. At the Jackpot Saloon, Engine Down with Bella Lie and Des Arc. Bella Lie features the former vocalist from Denali. That might be of interest to some people. It's an $8 show. Let's hop ahead to Thursday night, where the big ticket is Brian Wilson at the Starlight Theater. Big crowd noise,
show.
Courtesy of Eric Malin.
Exactly.
Did you spend $50 on a ticket for this show?
$62.
And why do you think it will be worth it?
Because this is the only time that I'm going to be able to see Brian Wilson play something that I want him to play from beginning to end. You know, he's been on tour before. He's more than likely going to do some Beach Boys tunes and some new stuff and blah, blah, blah. On this tour, he's doing the Smile album from beginning to end, which he started in the late 60s and never finished, and just finished last year. And although the recording is not as good as the old recordings from the late 60s, it's a cohesive unit. It sounds better than 90% of the stuff, you know, that came out last year. And I'm just really excited about seeing him play it.
Cool. Do you know if there's still tickets available for that show?
I don't. I would think so. I would think so.
Starlight Theater is outdoors. That could be very cool.
It could be very rainy, too.
Could be very rainy, too, yeah.
I think there's a 40% chance of rain, and so I've got a poncho just in case, because I'm not going to miss it.
I hear that. All right. Also at the Replay Lounge, Tight Phantoms with Temper Temper and Riddle of Steel. Actually, before this previous tune, we're listening to Colfax currently. We heard a Tight Phantoms tune. They are a very Motorhead-inspired rock band out of Chicago. Motorhead's kind of my token like hard rock band. I can't actually say I've listened to that much Motorhead, but it's like an easy thing to say when a band just, you know,
easy
has
reference.
Those ripping riffs, you know. So we will move on to Friday here, August 26th, and take a look at the map. On Friday, the big show at the Jackpot Saloon is, of course, Kofax with Buffalo Saints, who we are listening to right now. Here, let's listen to this for 1 second.
Woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
That show is at the Jackpot Saloon and Music Hall. It's a $7 show. The Architects, a local band, are playing at the Hurricane if you're up for a trip to Kansas City. The Lawrence Arts Center has the CD release of the Alfred Packer Memorial String Band. That is a $10 show. Anyone familiar with the band, perhaps from Tax Day down at the post office? They play sort of a wacky and crazy style of bluegrass. Bachman is at Fatso's, a jam sort of band from Columbia, Missouri. $3 to $5 on that one. Sellout is playing their pop cover spectacular at the Jazz House. Big Metal Rooster at the Bottleneck, $5 to $7. And let's move on to Saturday. South Park has the Kansas State Fiddling and Picking Championships. Pretty cool thing if you never checked it out. Basically a whole day of food, bluegrass music, various competitions, banjo, mandolin, etc., etc., etc. Kind of a mini Winfield for Lawrence right in our own backyard. Definitely worth checking out if you get a chance. There is a chess tournament at 10th and Mass Street, sponsored by Solidarity. That is happening at 2 p.m. and will be going all day long. Yallapalooza is at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, if that's your cup of tea. Tech Nine bringing his thing to the Granada Theater with Cut Calhoun and Potluck. Definitely a rising star on the rap scene, you know, Potluck. The Red Walls with OK Go at the Grand Emporium. That's an $8 ticket, and that's a pretty cheap show for a couple of really blowing up style bands. Mercury Mad and Her Dolls, that is Fiberlux at the Bottleneck, with Stillborn and 1 Million Tiny Jesuses. And Buffalo Saints, again, at the Replay Lounge with Gourmet Mushroom X. That is a $3 ticket. And finally, Eric, Dead Girls Ruin Everything, and the Spitting Cobras at the Jackpot Saloon and Music Hall. $5 on that one. That's at 10 p.m. And the after parties at the A Street Tap Room. Well, there probably will be no after party. Shows at the Jackpot usually close up pretty late. But Tropicalia is happening at the A Street Tap Room, featuring the men who brought you Latin Lab. It's a DJ type evening. So, all right. Thank you. I want to thank my guest Eric for joining us today. And hope you enjoyed our Dog and Pony Show. We'll see you next week.